iHeart Podcast.
Hello, welcome to We Knows Parenting. I'm Beth Newell.
I'm Peter McNerney.
And this is the Parenting Podcast.
It sure is. If you were expecting something else, tough luck.
I feel like we just get better and better at the intro as we go along.
I think we just are less worried about getting it right.
Anyway, catching up since last week, what's new?
We just had sex, which is something I'm not comfortable sharing. And if you're our parents, we're not going to talk about it. I just want to acknowledge it as a thing that is one of the things I'm afraid to talk about on this podcast. But just as a thing to do before recording, I got to say, I'm feeling pretty relaxed.
Wow.
Maybe I won't interrupt you so much.
You'll be significantly calmer than usual.
I'm now very embarrassed.
I feel like you're going to delete this later.
No, I don't have time. I got to get on a plane in like 6 hours.
Well, anyway, that's what we've been up to.
Yeah, you know, we should have recorded this an hour ago, but we decided to strengthen our bond as a marriage instead, and I stand by that choice.
Is there anything else you wanted to say about it?
I've already said too much.
The funny thing is, I think you're more uncomfortable with this being discussed on the podcast than I am, but you just keep discussing.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when Bryn knows he's doing something wrong, he has something he shouldn't, he'll like weirdly sneak towards you to see if you're checking on him, and it just gives him away. I sit down and I'm like, boy, I don't want to say the thing in my head. And then that's the first thing I say. Doesn't that make you comfortable knowing that I can't lie to you?
I mean, you can lie to me in the sense that you don't always think about the words you're saying until they come out of your mouth.
It's true.
And they're just like exaggerations of the truth.
Yeah, but anything truly deceitful, I can't hold on to that. What has happened this week? Maven's potty trained. Can we say that?
Yeah. I mean, when I picked her up the other day, she'd had two accidents at daycare in the same day.
But none the rest of the week. And today she wore underwear for the first time. So we had her go commando last week because underwear, it gives kids a false sense of security. Like it feels like a diaper. So when we first started doing it, we went naked and then pants, no underwear. And today she went underwear, pants, and she had a perfect day.
Well, what I'll say, over the weekend what she was doing was she would like pee a little bit in her underwear, which is, depending on the moment, was sort of more than a little bit. Yeah. And then she would like be like, oh no, oh no. And then she'd like go sit on the potty and pee and we had to clean her up. But she...
I mean, that's good.
It's a step in the right direction, I think.
She's recognizing, this is not good.
To
stop.
Yeah, I don't want to pee all over myself. But she doesn't really understand what's happening. So she's like, ow, ow, ow. And I'm like, no, you just don't like having wet pants.
She does make a really funny face when she gets bow-legged and she goes, ooh, no, ooh, no.
She did that when I had put a diaper on her because I was trying to get her to nap or something. And she started doing that bow-legged walk like she, as if, it's like, it was like an old comedy where someone's like shitting their pants, the way she's like walking like so comedically.
And you know those classic old comedies where someone shits their pants?
It is like a clown walk. It's like,
yeah, yeah.
Anyway, she does that and she like had a diaper on and I was like, she like didn't remember that she was allowed to pee anymore. Like, so she thought it was all going badly and it was just really funny.
Well, this weekend I took them by myself to our friend's house and she used the potty there, a big toilet, and I held her. And I thought she might panic and revert back in her training, but nope. She was like, I got this. I'm a big girl. Probably because there was a younger girl there that I think she's threatened by, so she has to show what an adult she is.
Yeah, she was. She's done in the past week. She somehow has become way more like outgoing, or she's like in this wild two-year-old phase where she's like testing all the boundaries.
Yeah,
and she's just like a little bit out of control. Like,
she was a nightmare tonight for a bit.
Yesterday, she was really difficult at times, but they both were.
Bryn was perfect traveling. I mean, he was a little stubborn at first and she was good. And then we got in the car and I started doing her seatbelt and she goes, no, she does her classic, not you, go yeah. away.
She's been doing a lot of that, just picking random battles and like not wanting to do things that you need to do.
And then she just didn't want her seatbelt on. And I was like, well, I'm not playing this game and you're not strong like Bryn, so I'm putting your seatbelt on. And then she just lost it.
Yeah.
I have a recording of her. She wanted to stay in the car when we got home, and I brought her inside, and I put her like in her room to calm down. Then she came out, and she put her shoes back on. She put her like vest back on, her hat back on, and I left the room, and I came back, and she was pulling on her jacket on the hook so hard, going, go away. And then I took a recording of talking to her, asking her if she wanted to go be in the car by herself, and that's what she wanted.
She wanted to go be in the car by herself?
Yeah.
Oh, she's just copying things that Bryn says he wants when he's being difficult.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. She just... The classic like toddler move is like wanting to wear a coat indoors or not wanting to wear one outdoors. Just like the most... Just self-sabotage.
Whatever you're trying to get me to do, that's the thing I hate.
She and Bryn were taking off their boots at the end of the time. We went to the playground yesterday morning for like a long time, which was good because I think they needed to be outside. Yeah. And they like were so like just would not leave within a regular amount of time. So then obviously we only left when they were like getting like under duress and hungry. And they both were like taking off their boots and like walking around in their socks on the cold playground. And then they like I started trying to get them to leave and Maven got really mad and she like when I wasn't looking because I was like helping Bryn, she like ripped her whole coat off and was like angrily throwing it. And then she like wasn't wearing her hat. And then within seconds of doing this in anger, I think she became just as angry at how cold she was. And she was like, my hat. And she's just kicking and screaming. I had to just drag her into the car because I was like, I'm not like standing out here while I try to get these clothes on her.
Yeah.
But it was just so funny her being in the car because she was suddenly so helpless. Like she just wanted her clothes back on so badly. It was just...
Yeah, Bryn at daycare a lot of times, he was like, I won't wear my jacket. I'm like, I stopped fighting. I go, okay, fine. I go outside. And then 5 seconds later, he's like, I'm cold. I'm like, you want your jacket? He's like, yeah. Maven in the kitchen tonight, too. I brought her in there. She's like, I want some water. And so it's always, you know, the wrong cup, the wrong plate. So I've learned to get ahead of it.
Yeah, I think part of maybe why she might be lashing out is because she got potty trained this week, and then in the same week we lost her last pacifier and just gave up on it, and it just unceremoniously she no longer gets to wear diapers or have a pacifier, and I think she's sort of like...
Her childhood is gone.
Yeah.
Innocence lost.
I think she's like feels a little crazy but doesn't know why, you know what I mean? Like yeah. She's like, what is happening?
She's lost two of her most constant comforts in life.
Because
something
also
wrapped around her bum and something in her mouth.
Yeah. She doesn't want to go to bed. She doesn't want to do anything. She's just like in a mood.
Yeah. I brought her in the kitchen and was like, want some water? I'm like, okay. And I pulled out the pink cup because I knew that it's what she wanted.
No, she's going to want the big pink cup now.
And she was
her
like,
only
this, no.
Option.
Then she wanted to be on the counter. And I was like, you can't climb the counter. And I was like, fine. Well, you want the pink cup? She's like, I don't want that cup. Like, what cup do you want? And then she was just overwhelmed and couldn't give me a choice. So I finally just picked her up and I stood her on the counter. This is after like 5 minutes. And then finally she looks in the cabinet and she's like, I want this pink cup.
Yeah, of course.
I was like, you mean the one I knew you wanted? Give me a break. Boy. So I'm going out of town again to New Orleans again, shooting a different commercial. I'm going to make a commercial with a professional athlete I don't know if I'm allowed to say. Boy, I just made it sound
get
like
a, excited.
I just
everyone.
Made it sound like a real big deal. maybe it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I'm leaving you alone for 3 days.
Yeah.
Shorter than last time.
Yeah, it's just so annoying. It's like there's so many levels of annoyingness to it. It's like the middle of December.
Yeah, it's a bad week.
It's
last time I went to New Orleans, you recorded half the podcast alone.
Yeah. Are you happy that I can't do this time because we don't need an episode yet?
I was really torn in that episode because, boy, I like it when people are thinking about me when I'm not there. But, you know, I'm selfishly excited, as always, to have a first-class ticket by myself. I have no complaints. And we have money to eat food, so.
They're flying you first class?
Yeah. SAG contract, baby.
Wow.
That's how it works.
Incredible. Well, I'm going to have fun here trying to drag two kids through the freezing cold.
Well, in January, you are going to the Cayman Islands without us just for
fun.
That's
true.
So, I don't feel bad.
This next segment is called Did You Knows? It's where Peter and I share some parenting information.
So, this comes to us actually from a listener who wrote in, and it's a little weird because she read something from Slate's parenting advice column. So it's a little weird that we're just taking somebody else's parenting advice column. But this writer, Smitty, wrote in and wanted our take on this column, and I thought it was interesting. So we're going to read it. And then Beth, you have not read this, so I sort of want your cold hot take, if you will.
Okay.
Your cold hot take, which I guess will be a warm take. All right. So this is Slate's parenting advice column. This is written by Carvel Wallace. So here is the person writing in. I live in a small building, 26 units, with some young families and other singles. We mostly get along very well, except for a family who has two small children, a 4-year-old girl and a 2-year-old boy. Sounds familiar. They live across the courtyard from me, and the children are always crying and screaming. The mother is always yelling at them inside their apartment and elsewhere. My next-door neighbor hears the worst of it. The other day, the mother put the girl outside the door and closed it because the child was screaming. She screamed louder. Then the mother took her inside and put her in a room and slammed the door, and the child screamed some more. I don't hear any of it. My neighbor shares a wall, so she does. The neighbors who know about this hate what's happening but don't want to get involved. I think someone has to step up to help these children from being mistreated. I've had family members who were terribly abused and know lots of people who were abused as children as well. As adults, they have said if only someone had said something when they were growing up, how different their lives may have been. Father travels a lot for business and isn't home a lot. He's pretty passive from what I can see. The mother is the screamer, and he tries to calm her down. She doesn't talk to anyone in the building and is an awful driver too. She always on her cell phone. Surprise! Even when the kids stuck their heads through the garage gate and almost got beheaded when another neighbor was pulling into the garage. There's a lot of exclamation points in this letter. We're hoping the family moves out when the lease expires, but that won't end the abuse / mistreatment. Everyone else is a big fat chicken, and I want to help these kids. Thank you. Love, noisy neighbor. Do you want to hear the reply? Or do you want to reply?
Maybe just give us the gist of it. I think we...
Okay. Dear noisy neighbor, it is my duty to inform you that while abuse is terrible, there is an alternate explanation for everything in this letter. It's called being a parent with little kids when your co-partner is never around. Here's something you may not know about kids. They scream like they are being abused and mistreated even when they are not being abused or mistreated. 4-year-old tantrums.
Okay, I think you get the point.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is mostly my reaction to this letter. I don't want to like diminish reporting actual abuse, but I think in the context of this letter, this person hasn't given us any sign that they like are genuinely concerned for the children. Like, I don't know. They just seem pissed at their neighbor, basically.
I live in fear that this is what our neighbors think about.
Yeah. When they were describing this, it sounds like exactly like my Sunday with the kids is like, they're like running down the hill when I'm trying to get them inside. They're both like running in different directions. I have to yell at them. Like they like, they're just freaking out. I like if they were a little older or we had like an enclosed outdoor space, I can totally see why I would make them stand outside a door. You know what I mean? It's just like sometimes you just need to like walk away from them so that they stop like acting up. It's just.
Oh, I give them alone time. I was like, you need to calm down. We have a little alone time, but I need alone time so that I don't murder them.
That was the only way I could get them both inside on Sunday, which was like they were like running all over the place, both like being bad and taking turns running away. And then they were like, you know, like all the way down the hill, which none of our listeners understand what this means, but they,
you know, the hill,
they're like, I finally had to just act like I was leaving them both outside and they're like both getting really sad, but it was like the only option of just being, I was like, I'm done trying to carry one of you while the other one runs away. Like,
yeah. And yeah, I can't, I mean, I won't, it's possible that there is something really problematic happening in the situation, but nothing that this person wrote leads me to believe that there is abuse happening.
Yeah. And I think the telling details for me is like, if she had been worried about the kid and been like, I've seen these signs, the kid looks sad. Like the, you know what I mean? Like if it felt like this was someone who was really picking up on like a core problem, like emotional problem, then I would be like, oh, maybe there's abuse there. But like the, she's picking out the mom like uses a cell phone. Like it's just like, okay, you just hate this woman. You know, like,
you know, this is, it's the road rage culture, you know, of the internet, you know, road rage, you can instantly despise a person because you don't see their face. And so you create a person in your head and in your head, they are the worst.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's
also
face to face, which
if she was
her.
Like so concerned for the kids in the situation of like when she said they almost got decapitated or something by the garage door, I didn't really understand what was said there, but it seems like if she cared, she would go to the mom and be like, hey, I'm worried about your kids having this thing happen to them. And like, what, how are you doing? You know, like
this is the rest of the advice that's given is like, sounds like this woman could use some support. Maybe you should make friends, like introduce yourself. I agree, you know, and if there's something, you know, if there is something terrible going on, that's also the best way to like look into it further is to introduce yourself, offer help. But yeah, as a parent who might have talked about this on the podcast before, who spent 35 minutes on an airplane holding Bryn's seatbelt on while he screamed, you're hurting me, over and over and over for half an hour.
Yeah.
I can understand how it might not sound like what it actually is.
Maven was doing that this week where she decided to start saying, you're hurting me. And so I had to just not respond to it at all because I was like, this is not something we're going to be saying.
Yeah, you have to ignore that. She thinks that it's a tactic that we're doomed. I was like, you know, I've told Bryn, you can't stomp on the floor because the downstairs neighbors.
Yeah, they've been knocking on the ceiling more and more. Just
I fully understand. I'm sure it's a nightmare down there.
Yeah.
But I tell Bryn, I was like, you can't stomp, you know, downstairs, they get angry. So Bryn knows that that matters and he gets upset and he's angry. He now specifically stomps. I was like, it might have been better if I said nothing at all.
Yeah. I mean, he's got your dramatic flair for life, so he's going to slam something.
He needs to flail a limb in a dramatic way every now and again.
Yesterday, he punched the closet and then he like must have hit his knuckle really hard and he was like, ow. And it was really satisfying for me to be like, yeah. Do you understand why we don't just punch things? Like,
it sounds like exactly something I have done in a fight with you.
Yeah.
Where I've stormed away and punched a bookcase and really hurt my hand. we need to talk about my most vulnerable moment. We fight like any other couple. Early on, I think we had our most epic fights where we were figuring out each other's fighting styles.
I have no idea where this is going.
This is going to one of my lower moments where I get real. I badger, like when we're in a fight, I badger you and badger you. And that's like the worst thing to do if you're trying to connect with Beth. Fun tip, everyone. So, and you will walk away and then I go ballistic.
Well, my friends and I have been talking about this and it's like, I think men don't understand how terrifying it is when you like corner us physically and just keep doing it over and over again. It's like being hunted and it's like, it's so threatening. And, I think you're like, oh, why is she not listening to me? And you're just like getting scarier.
Fair enough. I'm not going to argue with that, but I just don't want everyone to think that I'm like cornering you. I know walked into doorways and you felt like get out of,
but it just feels like being cornered when you're like, when someone is like walk away from someone and they follow you into the other room and then they are blocking the doorway, that's cornering someone. Like,
yeah, well, I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I hope not. It's.
But anyway.
I just wanted to say that because I think a lot of guys do that. And it's just like they think it's expected that they're like supposed to be aggressive in different situations.
Well, there's something about you, like when we're fighting and you just shut off and literally walk away, my brain explodes.
Yeah, but like. This goes back to the article that I always reference on Medium called Men Dump Their Anger Into Women. And it's just like women can have feelings like that of rage and not like lash out at someone. Like I'm not saying all women and all men, but like men are more likely to be like, oh, I have an emotion, like someone else needs to help me deal with it. And women are like, oh, this sucks. Now I have to process why this sucks. Like,
well, it's taken a decade of being with somebody who is 0% receptive to such a thing. Instantly now I know, like, this isn't going to work out for me. I have to just stop. But this is not the point of the story.
No, I don't know how we got on this tangent, but when I hear a lot of people's relationship problems, it feels like it comes down to a lot of this is just being like badgered and like it's just very frustrating.
But every couple you have to learn that.
Anyway, I think we were answering a question about.
Anyway, my point was we were in a big fight and you walked away and I had a wine glass in my hand.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I literally said, don't. And I was like so frustrated. I go, don't walk away. And I accidentally hit the wine glass on the table. And
you like squeezed it.
While also squeezing. It was the bottom of it hitting the table. And the whole thing shattered in my hand. And I looked down in shock. And there is a significant amount of blood instantly running down my hand. And you were gone, and I'm looking at it still enraged, but now very vulnerable. And I, in my smallest voice, just called out, I need help. You came back in, and you had a flash
of
fear, and then a tiny bit of pity, and then just such resentment.
It's just so
that you
stupid.
Needed, that
it's
you needed
so
to then
stupid
take care of
to
me.
Do stuff like that. It's just like...
Well, it's been a while since I've broken myself or an object out of anger.
I know.
Anyway. My son. Anyway. So Bryn
was
thanks
for bringing up that fun, fond memory.
It was a shameful moment. It was a low moment.
Anyway. Back to why we're not abusing our kids.
But Bryn was so angry the other day, and he can do a little bit of hitting sometime, and it was like not a big thing. So I brought him into the other room to calm him down. And I tried something I never did before, which I was just like, I was on the bed and he was there. And I go, you know what I like to do when I'm angry? And then I punched the pillow really hard. And he was like, it wasn't like scary. It was not really hard. I like hit it enough for him to be like, whoa. And I was like, that makes me feel better. And I saw his whole face change. And I was like, I hit it a few more times. I was like, that makes me feel less angry. And I was like, you want to try? And he's like, shook his head eagerly, and he started punching the pillow.
You're going to have to get him like a punching bag now.
Yeah. And then
honestly,
I
wouldn't mind if he had an outlet for this because he clearly just has like a need.
He lives in his body. He needs to just dance.
Yeah.
Dance it out. Anyway, being a parent is hard. Go make friends with a parent who's having a hard time.
This next segment is called Would You Knows. This is where Peter or a listener presents us with a hypothetical parenting situation and we have to discuss how we deal with it.
We do. And by we mean you, Beth. So we got a Would You Knows. It's been a little while since we've Would You Knows'd it. And this one comes to us from a listener from England named Charles. Hi, Beth and Peter. Hello from rainy London. I'm actually American, but have been living in London for about 15 years, where I met a beautiful English wife, and we now have an amazing 4.5-year-old daughter with a mishmash American/English accent. Then some more nice things, and a part where he supports the idea of a Beth button that I will skip. And
we'll come back to that.
Nope. And then he says, love the parenting hypothetical. Peter-sized Bryn is a classic. That is a classic. Check out that episode. Don't know which one it's on. Here's one for you. This is the Marty McFly conundrum situation. You have access to a time-traveling DeLorean or Honda Fit. Those of you laughing, you're real fans, that you could use for just one trip. You both decide to use that trip to visit your kids in the future. While there, you see that one or both of your children are about to make what you feel is a huge life mistake. You only have enough time there to try to stop them from making said mistake or do nothing and observe. Either way, you have to go straight back to your original time. Otherwise, you might slightly destroy the space-time continuum / collapse the universe / end civilization / fall into a plot hole, etc. A plot hole?
It's hard to understand.
This means you don't know what will happen if you don't get involved. You also don't know what will happen if you do.
I have to say, I don't understand this hypothetical at all. You're going into the future to maybe prevent your kid from making a vague life mistake?
You're going into the future just to check it out. But when you get there, you see Bryn and Maven are about to make a choice that you feel is terrible.
Just a vague bad choice. What could the choice possibly be?
Okay,
like,
you know,
only
what?
Murder? Before they're about to murder someone.
Before you go on, you have to listen to the rest of this.
Okay.
Because it addresses what you're doing right now. Question, do you intervene and prevent them from making what you perceive as a big mistake, or do you let it happen and hope that you raise them well enough to deal with adversity and learn from their mistakes? Beth, no picking it apart on technical grounds or invoking multiverse theory. Just go with it. Anyway, thanks for all the laughs. Hope you keep it going. All the best to both of you and your kids. Charles. That being said, you do raise some good questions.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around what this hypothetical implies about my kid. Like, if they're terrible, it's like, I don't know. There's nothing I can do to change the fact that they've apparently become terrible people.
Well, I think, not to pull a Beth here, but you go into the future to see that they're about to make a terrible mistake that will impact the further future. And you have a choice then and there.
Oh, the mistake is not about their lives. It's about the future of the world.
No. It's about them. It's their lives. But they're going to make – you go to the future to see them about to make a choice that may theoretically ruin the rest of their life. And that's the moment you have to decide whether –
just given an example of what this choice
is. You should have. But then do you do nothing and go back? But my question is, why wouldn't you do nothing because you don't want to mess with time and then go back to your original time and then raise your kids telling them, hey, if this thing ever comes up,
right,
don't do it.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand is like the fact that you're trying to prevent something in the future. Like it doesn't make any sense that time – like
if it was a real Marty McFly, you'd have to go to the past Oh boy. Oh, well. We are nitpicking. We're doing exactly. It's hard. What kind of mistake is it? Is like, if we, what if we went to the future and we're in Bryn and Mabron's room and Bryn's like, all right, see, we're going to rob this diamond store, Maven, and here's my plan. Nothing will go wrong. Is it like, I'm going to marry Karen. She's terrible.
It just, to me, feels like any choice they make is going to be for the purpose of, like, learning a life lesson. And I don't, like, they just need to have that experience. I don't know.
Yeah, how old are they? Are they adults? In which case, it's their problem. We know we did our job.
Yeah. I mean, unless they're, like, literally just going to trip off a sidewalk and fall into, like, an evil robot's mouth or something. Like, if that's the decision they're about to make.
Wait. I need to picture this scene where they're on a sidewalk, and just off the sidewalk is, I assuming, like a precipice or a manhole.
Yeah.
And in the manhole is just a giant robot with his mouth agape, waiting for someone to fall in.
It's not necessarily a manhole. It could just be like
a hole
where
the robot
grates are, or like in the future, evil robot dogs roam the subways, and it's like a population control, like victim blaming thing they've made up.
And they're just constantly, like, eating holes up through the street that are there, like...
They're held in pins, so they're not, like, roving wild. But if you fall in, it's considered your fault.
They're held in pins?
Like pens.
Oh,
like,
pens.
Like...
in a pen.
I don't want to keep explaining it. I think it's really obvious to everyone else.
But the pens, the robot dog pens, are underground with a hole big enough that you could fall off a sidewalk. It's really going to weed out of the people that are on their phones while they walk down the sidewalk.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead, Charles, and say, without a concrete example of what exactly the bad decision is, I'm going to say we let them make their own life choices. And then we go back in time and then change the way we parent so that they wouldn't even consider such a thing. Didn't think of that. Or does that mess with the time-space continuum? I don't care. You can mess with the time-space continuum if it affects the future. It hasn't happened yet. Just don't mess with the past.
Yeah. I don't think we have nearly as much control as we think we do, even if we do have time travel abilities. You know, it's going to happen.
Yeah, no.
The robots are coming.
I can barely plan tomorrow. I gotta say, Christmas shopping presents, I'm on top of it, but boy.
This is a struggle you and I have every year where I say, please get ahead of it so that I don't have to hear about it on December 23rd.
Yeah.
As you're scrambling to print something on a printer that has no ink.
But I gotta say, flying to New Orleans has really thrown a wrench in my plans, but I'm still more
ahead
of
schedule.
Mean
your plans to put it off until the last minute and keep saying you're on top of it?
To do this, I'm still more ahead of it than I've ever been.
Okay.
Anyway, Charles, if you've listened to the podcast, you know Beth needs incredible specifics in a would you know scenario. Here's everyone's homework.
You also wanted specifics. You're just making me sound like the difficult one because you're not answering his question.
It's true. I'm giving Charles a note, but I'm blaming you for the note.
Charles, I'll give it to you straight. Your question needed specifics. Okay?
It was a good first draft. I want someone's homework is to write us an insanely specific would you know scenario where Beth can't nitpick anything.
And it has to have time travel, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, that's a new rule. No, whatever it is, I want you to paint a picture. Let's get some real writers out there to go for it. And next week, we'll read some beautiful prose.
Anyway, would we stop them? Maybe.
I don't know. What'd they do? Now it's time for Listeners Wanna Knows. This is where we take an email and read it and discuss. Beth, you have one.
Yes. This is a listener who wrote in response to our gender discussion. I'm trying to remember what we were actually talking about last week.
I I was changing a diaper and some anatomy questions came up, and I, with no preparation whatsoever, for the first time explained genitalia to my kids.
Yeah, okay.
Not having thought it through.
Yeah, so this listener says, I am the mother of a 4.5-year-old transgender daughter. I had never knowingly met, although I obviously did without being aware of it, a transgender person before my daughter. She has changed my world in such an amazing way. I spend so much of my life advocating for her now. As a shortened backstory, she was born without incident, and we were told she was a boy based on her anatomy. We raised her as a boy until she was about 22 months old, and she started showing us in a million little ways that only became more and more obvious as time went on that she's actually a girl. I put as a boy in quotes because raising babies and toddlers by gender is a very loose guideline. Basically, we dressed her in typical boy clothes. We never instilled strict gender roles on either of our kids. We also have a 2.5-year-old cisgender, as far as we can tell so far, daughter. Such as girls get... this is wrong on a sentence. But we never instilled gender roles such as girls get these toys and boys get these toys. By age 3, she told us a dozen times a day that she was a girl and would correct us if we said anything that gendered her as a boy. What a smart boy you are, you're such a funny boy, etc. Within 2 months of her exclaiming her gender dozens of times a day, we allowed her to pick out a dress at a store. Within 4 months of her insistence, consistence, and persistence, we allowed her entire wardrobe to be picked out by her in the girl section at the store. By age 3.5, we changed her pronouns to she, her, and we changed the spelling of her name to be more feminine. By age 4, I was applying for a legal name change and gender marker change on all her legal documents so that she could enter kindergarten as her true self without a trail of documents denying her identity. She never once strayed from her insistence of her gender identity. This extremely shortened version of her story does not even touch on my story and my husband's story on how difficult this journey was for us along the way. Although we are 100% supportive and affirming, and she'll never know what it's like to be denied for years or even decades of her true identity like so many other transgender kids are. I'm writing to thank you for including so many marginalized groups in your discussions, especially transgender people. Exposure to the normality of marginalized people's existence will slowly but surely normalize my own daughter's existence. I spend an inordinate amount of time worrying about what she'll encounter in her future. Now is a better time to grow up transgender than any other generation before, but still we are probably 3 to 4 decades away from the acceptance level gay people have right now, which isn't even where it should be either. I did have one note for you based on this latest episode, Resistance Peeing, that I'm sure did not cross your mind as cisgender people, but deserves a mention. When talking about Maven and her potty training with both your kids, it's important as the woke parents you are not to say or confirm the statement that girls have vaginas and boys have penises. That kind of statement could put a child like mine at risk even in preschool, but especially kindergarten and grade school when kids get a little more understanding about people's bodies. In my family, we say some girls have vaginas and some have penises. We don't even use most instead of some because every single thing I instill in my children, particularly my transgender daughter, makes a huge difference. One simple statement could give her dysphoria of her body that could make her want to self-harm as young as 5 to 6 years old, not to mention that scary stuff that could happen at an older age. She is as much a girl as her likely cisgender sister, and her genitals don't deny her of her identity. Anyway, I think I'll end there because I think that last point was the one I really want to talk about, which is that the statistics she was quoting about what this could cause a transgender kid to do or feel about themselves at such a young age, I think was it's upsetting to hear, but I think I was like, oh, okay, this is like something we should all be more aware of so that we can be more cognizant of how we talk about these issues.
Yeah. I was so happy that this person wrote in because it's just something I've spent a fair amount of time thinking about working in with Story Pirates, where we serve every kind of kid there is, including transgender kids. And through that work, you know, I think when I first started doing it, I was 22. It was just like, yeah, we do, you know, we're just having fun up here. And then the more you do this, you meet kids. And as we build, do the kind of work that I do, whenever we're making choices for stories we're performing, we have to remind ourselves, like, okay, what if I'm this kind of kid and I'm listening to this story? What does this kind of message say to a gay child or a child with a missing limb or an overweight child or someone who's a minority? You know,
yeah, I feel kind of sort of feel the same way about performing in comedy or writing comedy over the last few years. It's like it, if you care about these issues, you become aware of sort of like what your work might unintentionally be implying or saying. And I think it can feel oppressive to like particularly white people to have to like learn about other people's oppression. And like we, you know, sometimes like bristle at it, but over time you start to realize it's just like very useful information to have so that you can be like a better citizen of the world and like just connect more with the people around you and like understand what they're going through. You know, it doesn't like take that much effort to just like listen when people are upset, you know?
Well, especially through the lens of comedy, where as you become a more mature person and comedian, you start to realize, you know, obviously that jokes where the joke is simply pointing out that someone is different, which is a lot more comedy than you might expect. Like, that's not cool to like make an arbitrary fat joke and where the joke is like, oh, you're fat, that's shameful. You can talk about heavy topics and subjects and sensitive things in comedy so long as it's speaking to the irrational behavior surrounding such things.
Anyway, going back to the listener email, I thought this was just a really interesting, like, I really appreciate the way this person laid it out so clearly and thoughtfully for, and not in any kind of like blamey way. It was just like she's calmly presenting the facts. And I said this before. I think like someone in this situation who heard, I mean, I don't think you did anything particularly triggering in what you said, but I can understand why she would be like, hey, like that's something you want to be aware of. It was very nice of her to not sort of send a more upset email.
Yeah, well, it was obviously something that I have actually thought about this, of how I would explain this to my kids so that it was inclusive and it wasn't so, you know, strictly binary. But I didn't have a plan. And in the moment it came up, it was them bringing it up and me just being like, boys, penises, girls, vagina.
Well, that's what I really appreciate about this email is just like it sort of gives us a game plan where we just, to be honest, had done. Like, I think I knew in my head, like, oh, we'll try to be like honest with our kids about their genitals and not like make them feel shame around them or whatever. But I didn't really like think about how that me discussing their genitals would impact the people around them in the future, which is like a useful thing to know, you know?
Because what I have in that moment have taught them is that it's this or this. So if somebody doesn't fit one of those two things, I have taught my children that they're wrong.
Yeah.
Well, because they're like, and especially kids of that age, they want to categorize and they want to know that these are the options. And when you meet somebody that doesn't fit their options, they're going to ridicule them without even realizing they're ridiculing them.
Yeah. But I think it's honestly just something they're only just noticing. Like,
yes. But here's the big thing that I was writing to somebody, I forget, but it's a lot of the times I think parents can be so scared of getting it wrong. And I think it is great to be aiming to sort of be open-minded and grow and like, quote unquote, get it right. And, you know, in this situation, I was like, oh, yeah, you know what? I like this, the way she spelled it out. That's how I should have done it. But you have a lifetime to get this right.
Yeah.
That was not the only opportunity I have to explain this to my kids. And it won't be the last time.
Yeah, no. And I think like the sort of threats that she mentioned about trans kids, you know, applies obviously more if your kid is trans and you need to set that example for them. Obviously, we all should be striving to, but I think it's mm-hmm. like if you're picking up on your kid, like, I don't know, identifying as a girl or whatever, I don't know. You just...
I mean, that if you've never... If you don't have anybody who has experienced that and you really haven't heard about that and your child is experiencing that, I can imagine that that is a stressful thing for a yeah. parent who feels like they're doing something wrong.
Well,
and you need to hear those stories to realize it's okay.
Every case of those stories I've heard has been a child like this one where it's just, they're just constantly insisting on this as their identity over a long period of time. Like, kids do have phases and say things they don't understand, but like if they're feeling something for like an entire year at such a young age, like that feels like a pretty core
yeah.
part of their identity.
That's a really common story for that, at least that I have heard for transgender kids. It's not every
yeah.
transgender kid.
But I think it's good for us to all know about this because I think, you know, when we're overhearing those, like, kids have those conversations about, like, girls do this and boys do that. Like, I don't think you have to, like, shove it down their throats, but you can just, like, quietly correct them and, like, move along. And mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, it's just, yeah. If you, like, lecture these things angrily at kids, I think they'll... shut down a little.
Yeah. But it's incredible. I mean, this is not a hot take, but it is incredible how much this has become a part of the national conversation in such a short period of time. The
yeah.
fact that, like, the new Roseanne, which is now not Roseanne, the Connors, where one of the grandkids is, I don't know what the label is.
Yeah.
Like, it is transgender. But, like, certainly... gender fluid character on a network comedy is exciting.
Yeah. And I think those representations will probably get more sophisticated as time goes on in terms of portraying like that actual experience. Cause I think like when this listener says she's like not telling half the story of like what she and her husband went through, it's like,
oh yeah,
there's like a whole story there to be told. I think of like people's anxieties around stuff like that. Like it's not something that we obviously want to judge, but you can acknowledge that it's a struggle for people to like get on board with things that they haven't been raised with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's like our struggle now is like, how do we create this culture where it's like, yeah, you're just raised with this and we're not like,
yeah.
How do we erase these behaviors ingrained in us?
Well, thank you, Jennifer. That is appreciated and needed perspective that we thank you for. This has been Listeners Wanna Knows. This has been another episode of We Knows Parenting. I'm Peter McNerney. That's Beth Newell. If you want to reach out, send us a question, a story, some advice, you can email us at weknowspod@gmail.com or find us on the social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at weknowspod.
You can also leave us a voicemail at 347-384-7396 if you'd like to record your question. We'd love that. You, please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
Please.
It really, really helps us out.
Please. That's don't whine. Our theme song is by Mates of State. Check them out. I'm going to go get on a plane. I love you, Beth.
Bye.
Bye.